Quick shout out to our sponsor, Dealfront. Struggling to reach decision makers? Dealfront has you covered. It's your all-in-one platform to target ideal leads and close deals. Dealfront stands out with live European data in multiple languages, giving you insights and access others can't match. Finding the right decision makers is now just a few clicks away. Dealfront combines market signals, web visitors, and EU company databases, all while ensuring GDPR compliance. Ready to transform your sales game? Get your free demo at dealfront.com. That's dealfront.com. Or check the link in the description and show notes. Elevate your sales strategy with Dealfront. Hello, listeners, watchers, subscribers, and fans, and welcome to the SDR Disco Call Show. If this is your first time joining, and perhaps you've stumbled across or somebody recommended that you get down with this show, what is it all about? So we live in the world of tech sales, and within tech sales is a really cool position called sales development or business development. And at a super high level, these sales reps reach out to prospects, either cold or warm, to introduce them to the software and then hopefully get them into a sales cycle. And with this show, we want to bring interesting people from around the globe to give you insights into what is this profession all about. And this sometimes can be reps or it can be leaders. And we actually have a leader here today with us. Before we begin, I just want to give a big ask is if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give a rating and subscribe. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. Now, coming back to this great guest that we've had on board, I've had the privilege of actually sales coaching a lot of his team, and to say they speak highly of him. And every now and then we get into the LinkedIn DMs, chat, and you know, reconnect and talk about great topics around sales. And I thought, I need to bring this gentleman on the show. So without further ado, guest, could you tell us who are you? Where are you based in the world? And what do you do, sir?
What an intro, by the way. So my name's Ashley Ormond. I'm the Senior Manager of Global Strategic Sales Development, based down south in Peacehaven, which is just outside of Brighton. And what was the other part? What does Brownwatch do?
Yes. Well, so it was, who are you? Where are you based? And what do you do? And yeah, if you could let us know, what does Brownwatch do, Ash?
Yeah, so I lead a team of SDRs and ADRs. And we focus on, well, Brownwatch focuses on selling a suite of solutions, which includes social listening, social media management, influencer marketing, and stuff for PR and comms. An all-round package, you might say.
I love that. That's a strong intro, sir, so thank you very much. And to give a bit more context as to, you know, the world that you guys focus on, what are the typical job titles or personas that would be using something like Brandwatch?
So that I think that's a really interesting one, because other companies that I've worked at, you have like one ICP, right? So you like learn all about those. But because we've got a suite of solutions and because we can help so many, we go after anyone in marketing, consumer insights, social media, as I say, PR and comms. So we've got a vast variety of ICPs or personas that we can go after, which makes the job interesting, but also tricky at the same time, right?
Yeah, indeed. Because you're speaking to lots of different people and they can all have their own needs and wants kind of from that. But by the sounds of it, you guys are helping getting people's brands watched. Would I have that correct?
So not watched, but more so helping brands understand the consumers' trends, competitors a little bit better. Right. So there's so much data out there, as you know, online, and we're able to cut through all the noise, all the crap, and really understand deeply what topics or interests people are talking about online, which ultimately feeds into trends as well.
Spoken like a true professional. Thank you very much, Ash. And a question that I love to ask all our guests to kind of give us a bit more context as to who you are. We'd love to know, like, outside of sales and outside of Brandwatch, what are your passions, hobbies, interests? What do you like to get down with, Ash?
So, I love watching football. I'm a Man City fan. Got a load of family up north. But other than that, I've got three kids. So hobbies are my kids' hobbies, you know? Mm-hmm. So going out to the park, walking the dog, like just being with three very hypo, very active children means I really haven't got a lot of time for myself to do anything else, to be fair. So yeah, they keep me extremely busy, I would say.
I love that. Thank you so much, Frank. And anything from one sales dad to another, maybe this is a topic that we can talk about, because in episodes I've spoken to people that have been mothers within sales and they share their insights. So maybe we could get down on the, what does it mean to become a sales dad? Would you be up for that?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Awesome. Love it. All right. So listeners and watchers, normally at this point of the show, what we like to do is go visit our guests' LinkedIn profiles. And as a general reminder, we will always be putting their LinkedIn links within the show notes. So if you have any questions or you want to connect with Ashley after the show, feel free to reach out. And FYI, he is hiring for a couple of SDRs. So if you want to be working with Ash, here's your opportunity to hear who he's all about. So Ash, no pressure, but feel free to apply.
But with Ash and ADRs.
And ADRs as well. Yeah. I love that.
We might have to touch on that. Not a lot of people know what an ADR is.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So with Ash, he's somebody who posts out a lot of great content. I love his posts. So I'd highly recommend following him. But looking at your career, Ash, you've had quite an extensive career. So if we go way back in the day, you know, doing actual door-to-door sales, you've worked at energy companies such as EDF, Stock Trader, you've worked in recruitment, you've had your own biz as well. And obviously with Brandwatch for the last 2.5 years, you've actually worked your way up from being an SDR to being a global manager. So we'd love to kind of like put the question back to you, like Ash, in your own words, could you walk us like from the beginning of how did you get into sales? And could you walk us through that journey of how you could then got into Brandwatch?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we go way back when, for the door-to-door thing, just before the door-to-door career or role I had, I was actually 18 years old, and if anything, I was very, very drunk, walked out, and actually got hit by a double-decker bus.
Bloody hell.
So I was in a coma for 2 weeks. Wow. Obviously had to kind of learn to walk again. I said I'd never walk again and all this kind of stuff. In and out of hospital for 4 months, then another 3 months and stuff like that.
Wow.
So it took me 2 years to walk again. So I said to the surgeon, what can I do to try and like, and it was like physio, like do a load of physio and stuff like that. So I thought, what job can I do where I'm on my feet all day walking? And obviously door to door, pretty much anyone, if you can hold a sentence together, you can probably get into that role, right?
Yeah.
So I went doing door to door all across the country, Birmingham, Manchester, down here, down in the south. And I was walking around with one crutch and a notebook. It was that, if anything, if you're going into sales or you're not too sure, I would highly recommend going into kind of door-to-door sales. One, it's easy to get into, and two, it will teach you a wealth of resilience more than any other profession, I would say. Going to someone's door and getting it slammed in your face continuously all day for like 14 hours a day, that will teach you, especially when you're soaked, you know, training all day. From that, I was doing that for a little while, and that was a commission-only role.
Yeah. And just to pause you there, because that's kind of like my mind's been blown, and I can assume that my listeners or watchers are probably thinking like, rah, okay, dude. So like, if I get this right, at 18, in, you know, a horrible accident, you know, in hospital, like having a coma, talking to the doctors, and then asking that question of, okay, I'm in this hard position. How can I improve this? How can I get stronger? How can I, you know, help my leg out? And then finding like probably one of the toughest gigs of doing door-to-door sales and putting yourself like, what, how did you mentally prepare for that? And physically, what was the impact to you, like doing all those steps and hitting all those doors physically? What was that like?
So obviously it was really, really difficult, right? And I got the kind of nickname of Soldier Boy at the time.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
But I think for me, it was either I was kind of faced in with a kind of decision. Do I feel sorry for myself and just like feel like, let's go down this negative path of why me, why has this happened? Obviously, when I was in hospital, like that, them kind of thoughts happened.
Yeah,
it
was
a very like roller coaster ride, right? But then on the flip side of that, you think, right, this has happened. This is like, I'm here for a reason. I could have easily died. Obviously, I'm here for a reason to do like do something, right? My time's not up. So, and then you kind of, it was just a really, I just kind of threw myself into it, you know, because I was always good with people. I'd always have really good conversations with people, and
yeah,
it just seemed like the natural kind of thing to do. But I went into that role purely for the aspects of being on my feet and learning to walk again, not for sales, you know? Yeah. And then it kind of just naturally progressed from there, I would say.
Bloody hell. I think if I was a hiring manager and you came into my interview and said, and if I said to you, so could you like maybe walk me through like some challenges that you've had and how you've overcome that? If you told me that story, dude, I would have been like, sold. All right, I want this soldier guy on my freaking team. That's an amazing story. So, kind of like, sorry to interrupt, but like walk us through like that door-to-door experience. You're knocking on doors, you know, it could be wet weather, you've got your crutch, you've got your notepad. What were kind of like the main takeaways for you for doing door-to-door sales, Ash?
I think the main takeaways were that it didn't really matter what I was selling. It's about kind of connecting with people. And at that time, it wasn't proper sales training either. It was very, I would say, like basic. Like knowing what I know now, it was very basic. It was like features and benefits. Lead with the kind of features. No, we didn't dive into people's problems or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I thought back to it now. I think I'd do a lot better, to be fair. But yeah, it was just a such a crazy experience because we didn't have any office like chairs in the office or anything like that. So you're literally on your feet all day, traveling on the train, and then like going to different patches and walking around the streets soaked in a suit. It's a really tough gig, right? And because you was commission only, if you haven't closed any or got any kind of leads or deals or whatnot, by like 5 o'clock, you kind of you stand there with your team and think, do we carry on for another hour or do we just call it a day? And it was always, let's carry on. Like, let's get something out of the day. And ultimately, more people were home at that time. This was way back when, before people would work from home as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are kind of peak times. Such a good experience, though.
No, I can imagine. And I think before we move on to like the next role after door-to-door sales, did you have any crazy stories of like any funny things when you knocked on people's doors and did anything weird happen?
Yeah, so one time I knocked on this door and then it was like, it was such a packed house. And then I was like, oh, so the trick was you kind of do your kind of pitch and then you go, oh, could I use your kind of step behind you to kind of sign you up, and then you kind of point and they would look behind, and then before you know it, you're pretty much in. They invited me in, and then I ended up having they was cooking like a massive family meal of like mayonnaise, and I ended up signing about 5 people on the table. So they gave me food and everything, and that was a day. It was like snowing and all sorts that day, but they kind of like brought me in, fed me, and I earned quite a bit of commission out of that as well. So win-win for everyone, you know?
I love that. Getting 5 people up, getting a lovely full dinner in cold weather and being allowed to come into the house. That's freaking awesome, dude.
Yeah. Although, I would say when we done door-to-door in like Birmingham, there's certain streets you can't go down like if you're white. People would kind of be... I had some crazy experiences, like people being pulled back, trying to like chase you down the street. Obviously, I couldn't run. But you get abuse, you get spat at, and stuff like that. It was just honestly the most. And it kind of taught me to not take things too seriously. You know, if you're angry, that's up to
not you.
You're obviously having a bad day. But it would just make you more. I don't know. It just make me more like excited to speak to the next person. It's such a crazy experience.
I love what I'm kind of getting from you, Ash, is you're the sort of person that can take a situation and kind of flip it into a new route or path. Would you agree?
Yeah, I always like to look on the bright side, if you like. So yeah. I think especially what happened to me, obviously there's people out there in worse situations, you know. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of people in hospital who was like losing their legs, and I was faced with amputation and stuff like that. And then because that obviously didn't happen because I was so young, put things in a lot of perspective. I'd be in a hospital bed next to someone else who just had like both their legs amputated. And they'd be like crying themselves to sleep and stuff like that. Mm. And it just makes you feel like, actually, I'm pretty lucky, you know?
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
I think that's really important to kind of take through life, as there's always someone out there that's probably worse than you. So like knocking on someone's door and asking them to sign a bit of paper is just, yeah, there is worse things you could be out there doing, you know?
Yeah. And I think, like, just to quit, I 100% agree with that. For somebody myself, I've just come out of hospital recently. And that, it, like you said, it puts things into perspective. And I had pneumonia. I was in like the A&E ward. I remember this old gentleman had walked in, and he was walking past my bed. And I'm the sort of dude that just tries to make friends with everyone because it just makes me feel comfortable in the room. But this old gentleman, I think his name was Ted, and as he was walking through, I looked at him and he just looked so lost. And I said to him, "Hi, mate, my name's Neil. What's brought you in here today?" And he said, "I've got a swell on the brain. They've just done an X-ray on that. I had a fall and slabs of concrete actually hit his head."
Really?
And he just looked, he said, "It just happened earlier today, so I'm here." I said, "Okay. Have you got any family coming to see you?" He said, "My wife's coming, but she's in bits at the minute. And I'm just worried where I'm going to..." And I just sat down with him, put my hand on his shoulder. I said, "You're in the best place. St. George's are going to be able to help you out. My name's Neil. If you need anything, food comes around here," like that. And just trying to make him feel a bit more, you know, happy.
Yeah.
And then a couple of hours later, like, he's feeling calm. His wife's come in. Then he went to his wife. "This guy's Neil. He's a lovely young chap. He's been helping me out and stuff like that." And she came over, just started crying, saying, "Thank you so much for looking after my hubby." I said, "I'm not looking after him. I just wanted him to make him feel safe." But it put into the perspective of, all right, I had pneumonia, and it was like the worst health situation I've ever been in my life, and I was worrying about a whole bunch of stuff. But when I saw a dude's got like a swell on his brain, you know, it made me grateful that I wasn't to that extreme, and then wanted to go help that guy out. So yeah, you're right, definitely puts things into perspective. And now I look at other things which maybe I may have been worried about. I said, "Dad, you know what, I'm not as worried or stressed about that situation anymore." So thank you so much for sharing, dude.
And I think there'll be people out there listening to this that would have kind of situations or challenges that probably they're put to the back of their mind, and and I think sometimes it's good to kind of reflect on those challenges, to be kind of thankful for where you are and where you're going and what path you're on as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, embrace what you've been through. You can't change it, so you can only kind of change the mindset and kind of moving forward as well. But I think that's a really good kind of story there, Neil, where you've just because he probably would have been absolutely freaking out during with his own thoughts, and you would have kind of, made him feel at ease.
100%. 100%, dude. Thank you for sharing that, mate.
What a legend.
Likewise, dude. Likewise. So, talking about paths, so walk us through, like, what happened after this door-to-door sales? What was the next step for you, Ash?
Then I had to get a proper job, if anything. A job with a salary. I was trying to buy a house at the time. And then went into EDF Energy. So started there, customer service advisor, all inbound stuff, really, just firefighting everything. And then kind of worked my way up through there to team performance coach. So I was taking people's stats, doing like one-to-ones, trying to coach and develop people there. But that was more, I would say that was more kind of product and system stuff more than like selling, if you like.
Yeah.
But I always wanted that sales piece. So then kind of moved into more of a sales manager role. And that was just the most crazy of times ever because I had a team of 20. Mm. I had two banks of 10 in the office, and they really didn't like each other.
Was it them and us sort of thing?
No, it was literally like they'd had arguments. They were classed as the the team no one wants to manage. So I was excited, and then I got the role, and then after everyone was like, oh, that's the team that no one wants to manage, and I've quickly found out why. So I thought, how do I turn this into like my benefit and stuff like that?
So
I used to do competitions between them. Even simple stuff like Connect Four. So if you got a, because we was doing sales at the time, so if you got a sale, you got to put the counter in. So that meant the other team had to put like get a sale quickly. So yeah, it was really good. It taught me quite a lot, really. But yeah, I was quite a shell shock for the first month or so. It was just ridiculous. So yeah, and then yeah, after being at EDF for like 7 years. Redundancies were coming up, so I took that. They was just offering redundancies out to kind of managers and so on. So I took that because I thought there's a little fire inside me that I want to do something different. And then I think Wolf and Wall Street come out around that time, or something along those lines. And I was like, let's do some stock trading. So I went off, done some stock trading, and yeah, I pretty much blew my redundancy money on that.
Oh no, really?
Yeah. So I got up to quite a good amount, but it's just calculated betting, I think. So it was a really tough time because my whole family were relying on me at the time. I was getting more and more trades, more and more wins, and then if anything, I was just putting more on. And then I had a massive loss, and it pretty much, I'd done so much money, and I was just like, I cannot do this, you know? And then I had Michaela, my partner, she was like, you cannot continue like this. So it was like, back on the job hunt again, what can I do now, you know?
That's mad. And just to kind of pause on that, because I've come across like friends that have either done like stock trading or even in the world of, you know, a lot of SDRs that I've coached or trained. Some of them have come from that background of being stock trading and then coming into tech and SaaS. And I agree with you the way in terms of like, you know, it's betting to an extent, right? You're like, you're having to calculate like when things are going to come in to sell, et cetera. Again, I'm not an expert, so I don't know. And it's always kind of like intrigued me, but it's also scared me on the other side because, again, I've never really been a betting man like a football or anything, but I used to be addicted to fruit machines in my teens. And I remember I used to have a boss. It was actually, but when I used to work in Pizza Hut, it was my boss Kev that got me hooked onto fruit machines and fruities. And I used to spend like Saturdays, like, you know, emptying out the fruit machines, waiting for people to pop money in, sitting there with my pint, watching them like lose all their cash, and then coming back and they're like, right, pop it in. And every time I went to the pub, we'd be with like our work crew, and everybody's ordering their pint, and I'd be like, oh, I'll be back in 1 minute. It was because I went off to the fruit machine first to check if I could go win my pint before buying it, right? But what Kev taught me kind of was, you know, the in essence is the house always wins.
Always
wins, right? And if you can't afford to lose that money, then you just don't play. So that's kind of why. And this also brings me back to one last thought, which is something I kick myself really hard today, right, Ash? When I started as an SDR at a company called Zora, we were talking to lots of tech companies, and we were supposed to look for subscription businesses. That was our ICP, or somebody's going to convert to a subscription business. And I remember speaking to one guy in EMEA, and he had a business, and he said to me that I should maybe sign up for his service that he's providing. And he says, what I have to do is buy a wallet, and with this wallet, I need to buy this digital currency. And back then it was like 500 quid or something like that. And as an SDR coming into new wealth, I could afford that. But that house always wins mentality stopped me from doing it. I said, this just feels like a scam. In short, what it was the early days of Bitcoin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I did not buy Bitcoin 15 years ago. And I kick myself today because if I bought that wallet and those tokens from that guy that was doing it legitimately, you know, I might not be here, dude. It might be a completely different story.
Yeah.
But yeah, that whole element of betting, it does scare me because I've seen people lose big money on stuff like that. And as you mentioned, you've got your partner, you've got your family, people on the line. So as you mentioned, you needed to go get what you consider like another job, right?
So what happened? Yeah. And I think just going back on that point as well, I went into kind of stock trading because I think maybe it's because of like the bus incident and stuff like that, like just faced with like death, basically. I always had that mentality of I don't want to regret anything. Yeah. I don't want to like not try something and then regret it. And I think that was the kind of mentality I had. And I've always got crazy ideas. I mean, we got married a couple of weeks ago. Thanks, mate. And during my wife's vows, she even said she'll love me no matter what, even with my Del Boy ideas. so that got a big laugh. Yeah. But yeah, going into from there, it was like, what can I do? And what's got a low bar to entry? So recruitment was the kind of obvious choice. Interestingly enough, I interviewed at Reed and didn't get it. I was down to the final two and didn't get it. And then they called me a few months later and then offered me the job again. So I was like, yeah, like absolutely. So I was basically recruiting for secondary school teachers. Sussex. So that was really interesting. I think my director at the time, he said I was a little bit rough around the edges, be speaking to like head teachers and stuff like that, but I was like, oh, just like let's just run with it, right? But that taught me about, I would say, just getting on the phone. There was no emails like at Reed or in our team. It was just constantly on the phones to candidates in the morning, on the phones to prospects or schools in the afternoon, right?
Yeah.
But we'd done like supply teachers. So I'd start calling out to schools to see if they needed anyone from 6:45 in the morning.
Wow.
And yeah, just like, so yeah, the whole Sussex ringing them up. Do you need anyone today? Do you need, it was literally just like that, just call after call. And then, yeah, then we've done kind of temporary kind of teachers and permanent recruitment as well. So it was kind of like that. That's why I always now, when I speak to my team, for example, and they're like, I'm not too sure how to do this, I'm always like, why don't we split it into like your day into two halves, do like a morning session and then have some lunch and then do an afternoon session. It's quite easy to kind of get to grips with if you're like getting going on certain projects, for example. So yeah, that was really good. And then I had a really good time there and I was like, I just need to get into tech. I think tech's the kind of way forward. So then went into the tech recruitment and it was just an absolute nightmare.
Really?
So again, I thought, oh, let's just get into, like, I'll do the same thing, just get on the phone, just be on the phone all day, every day. And I went in on the phone all day, every day. Didn't really have, we had a sales trainer who was really good, but I felt like I needed like someone to put their arm around me and be like, look, like this is the, like you need a little bit more kind of product knowledge or like not product knowledge, but more, because we was going after like digital manufacturing companies. I didn't know anything about that, right? Needed something around that. And I really didn't do very well there at all. So I kind of placed the candidate. He dropped out. I got a couple of jobs on. They never went really anywhere. So after a year of just working my ass off, I was like, I just can't do it. It just burnt me out so much. And then I questioned everything. Am I good at sales? What should I do? Should I just leave sales altogether? Should I leave recruitment? It messed my head up a lot.
And I think just to kind of pause on that, like that, I think what some people need to understand is where online, especially in the world of digital and LinkedIn and stuff like that, there's a lot of people that are successful or deemed successful, and success is definitive based on how somebody perceives success. So it could be money, it could be tenure, it could be, you know, responsibility, it could be anything, right? A whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. But I think there's this element where some people may look up to people and think, wow, they're perfect. How did they attain that? But it's that element of those successful people question themselves on a regular. And we may have, you know, insecurities about, are we adequate enough? But some people don't see that stuff online. They don't know, you know, they only see the tip of the iceberg and below. Because I can be honest with you, dude, as a manager, I can categorically remember many a points where I've had my head in my hands. I've been at tears and I've questioned myself as a leader, as a sales rep, and thinking, oh, you know what, this was a dream, but I might have to pack it all in and just go find a normal 9 to 5. And when I say normal, I just mean outside of sales.
Yeah.
And I remember there was this one point where I was a manager for a company called Intuo. It was a HR software in Belgium. And I'd been brought on as a consultant, but I was an SDR manager for hire. So I was doing all the responsibilities of an SDR manager. Mm-hmm. But there was this element where, and you may be familiar with this, the summertime is hard for pipeline. And I'm not going to go into any deeper because I may get told off for that. But, you know, numbers weren't there. And I had the company founders putting a lot of pressure on me to try and pull something out of the bag.
Mm.
And I remember going, I was staying in a hotel just around the corner called the Hotel Campanile. And I remember being in my room. It was a midsummer sort of evening. And I was just bawling my eyes out because I couldn't see a way out of this.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the slide deck and I was looking at the numbers and I was looking at the dashboard. And, you know, the team, some of them, I just felt like they weren't motivated enough or just wasn't hungry enough as I was. And I was bawling my eyes out, dude. So the one thing that I did, and this is going to sound really weird, was I put a whole bunch of grime music on and a whole bunch of instrumentals. And some people know I'm an MC, so I was just spitting bars to try and get this emotion out.
Yeah.
So got it all out. And then the story goes, the next morning, went into the office with the founders and I just said to them, I'm lost. I said, I really want to make this work, but I'm struggling and I need some help. Mm-hmm. And as a manager, sometimes it's hard to ask for help because you're the guy, the person that's trying to build this thing.
Yeah,
and the founders
all right.
But the founders then put their arms around me and said, no, man, don't worry. We've got your back. Look, we'll help you with the team on this. Da, 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 da. And I was like, oh, wow. And all that anxiety just lifted. Mm. And to kind of like put a crescendo to the story, at the end of that quarter over the summer, they had the highest amount of pipeline they had in company history.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it was a team effort. So just coming back to that point of questioning ourselves, it's normal.
Yeah.
We don't always have all the answers. And asking for help is a big element. But sorry, to take it back, coming back to yourself, like you was in that zone, like what did you do to kind of get out of that funk, Ash?
It was really difficult, to be fair. And I took a few weeks out and I just didn't know what to do, you know? Yeah. And I was in that same situation. Should I get like a normal 9 to 5? Mm. And then it was only because someone who had left the same company like a few months before, he called me and said, I see that you've left. What are you doing now? Mm. Are you going to open your own or run your own recruitment company?
Mm.
And I was like, no, I'm terrible at recruitment. Why would I do that? And he was like, look, I'm doing it right now. I'm doing really well. I can help, introduce you to people. I know how to set it all up. I was like, I've no idea what I'm doing. Mm. And then the kind of Del Boy thing was like, oh, like, let's just do it. Do you know what I mean? Let's just run with it, see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm quite impulsive like that.
Mm.
So then I thought, yeah, let's do it. So then I found like a bit of a... No, before that, actually, I interviewed with someone. He started his own business and he was actually at the same company I was, same recruitment company that I left. And I interviewed him and the interview sparked like the most significant part of my sales career, I would say.
Okay.
So we were talking and actually he was having one-to-one sessions with Benjamin Dennehy.
Sales trainer. Yeah.
So he started his own recruitment company and he's obviously getting coached by Benjamin. And then some of the questions he was asking me, I was like, why are you asking me that? Mm-hmm. It was like, he'd done this kind of example with me. He was like, I'm going to say loads of amounts of money, like 10 grand, 20 grand. And I want you to raise your hand at what you consider a large amount of money. Mm. So I've done it. And then after I was like, why did you get me to do that? And he said, because that's where your kind of limitations are. If we're talking about 100 grand deal and you're thinking 50 grand deal is large, then you're going to almost be scared to talk about that amount of money and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, even if you don't hire me, he was like, I'm not going to hire you because you're too experienced for what I'm looking for.
Mm.
But I was like, teach me what you like, how you know this. And then he like brought me into the world of Sana sales methodologies.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I took that and I was obsessed. I was reading all the books. I was watching a load of videos. I was literally obsessed. But and then I thought, let's start my own recruitment thing and use this to kind of learn and develop. Oh, it was just it changed everything for me. You know,
I
was leading with problems. I wasn't selling features and benefits. I was doing more like a consultative approach, but challenging what they would say and just really holding my own. I wasn't putting the prospect on a pedestal or anything like that. We was aligned, you know. I was there to help you as well as you. Like, it was a two-way street.
Yeah.
And that really changed my mindset on sales like tenfold, right?
I love that.
And then I just realized after about 9 months, I actually hate recruitment. It's just not where I want to be. A lot of it is out of your control. And I think for all the football fans out there, I think recruitment is a lot like scoring a goal and then waiting for VAR to kind of confirm if it's a goal or not. Because once you place a candidate, once you place a candidate in a role, you can't really celebrate like massively, right? Because you've still got their notice period, stuff could happen, their wife could say, let's move, they could move locations, and they could drop out last minute, you know? And I didn't want that uncertainty, I think. I think that was a massive driver for me. But yeah, the Sana stuff really... So when I went for an interview at Brandwatch, I just backed myself massively. And then going into that commercial SDR role where I was booking meetings for like the smaller size companies, I was on the phone all the time. And at the time, all the other, like the rest of the team, some would jump on the phone. A lot of them wouldn't, I would say. But I was having really good conversations with decision makers, getting them over the line. And then that's what kind of started my Brandwatch journey, I would say.
I love that. And before we kind of like go into the actual Brandwatch story as well, I think that's really awesome where, you know, you're in an industry of recruitment, you found that you were struggling with it, but then you had this element of launching your own company and doing it for yourself. And also having somebody that's doing the same thing as you, going through an experience with them. And it just like kind of blew your mind a little bit. Like, why did you ask me all that? And I like that whole thing of, I know it's like, maybe it's a bit conceited, but I'm going to give you money amounts and you tell me what's big and what's not big to you. Because I think when I started doing SDRing, it was for an enterprise. So entry level was 125 grand for using that solution. And some conversations I had were north of 400 million. Then you're just like, that blew my mind. So that when I started living life and I said, oh, well, that jacket's only 120 quid. And that's nothing. It's 120 quid.
Yeah.
And it did come to my detriment because I started spending too much money. But coming back to yourself of, doing your own biz, but then taking those 9 months, but coming to that conclusion of this isn't for me. And I think that's a really good thing to have because my father's always given me this advice of any type of job. He says, if you go into a job, stick it out for 6 months. And then ask yourself, is this what you like doing? And if it isn't, he says, at least use the next 6 months to plan your exit. Don't just quit straight away, you know, because that 6 months, because it would give you at least a year tenure on your CV. But, you know, you could still be earning, looking for other jobs. And I'm not advising people to, like, when you're in a job, go secretly have interviews and stuff like that. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying giving yourself some time to come to the conclusion of this isn't for you because you've tried and tested it. And as you mentioned earlier, you don't want to regret stuff. You want to kind of see at least try it out, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And the other bit that I love is a methodology like Sandler is something that opened your mind to a new way of thinking.
And ridiculous. Yeah.
And I can relate to it. So I've done, you know, spin selling. I've done Sandler. I've done the Challenger Customer. I learned a lot of methodologies. But these were things that I learned whilst doing the job. Because I do meet a lot of people that are brand new to sales and like, Neil, what would you recommend reading? And I initially just say, not a lot. Because I'm like, you have content, but unless you can put the context to it and do it in practical, it's really hard to retain.
100%.
Yeah, and fully understand.
Yeah.
So I think I came to a point in my life where I was at a company called Showpad. And I learned a lot of great sales methodologies from them. But when I was introduced to Winning by Design and their customer-centric SaaS model, that went in my head. And I became obsessed with like the ACE, the agenda, and et cetera like that.
Yeah.
So that when I exited Showpad and launched my own company, I went to go work for them because I was so obsessed with the methodology.
Yeah,
and able to implement it because I had like, you know, 5 or 6 years sales experience. So that was my context. Then I could apply the content to what I'd learned. And that's when I geeked out on sales and then did my own company and was teaching my own methodology of all the little things that I've learned and then put it into one, right?
100%. I think that, yeah, I think what, yeah, that is exactly, it blew my mind and I was obsessed, right? But I think you've made a really good point there with, it's all well and good reading something, but unless you're putting it into action and trying it, it's like,
it doesn't stick.
It really doesn't. And I think I had the platform because I was running my own recruitment company to try different things, to like A-B test things that I'd never had done before.
Yeah.
And it really threw me out of my comfort zone. I was trying stuff that I'd never, ever would even dream of trying, you know. But it was working and I was getting some success from it. And I was like, oh my God. And I think I mentioned that I hated recruitment. I don't think I hated recruitment. I think it was more, it overtook my entire life. I was doing marketing. I was doing content. I was doing website building. I was doing candidate stuff. I was literally waking up and I was on LinkedIn looking for content ideas. And then I'd do the European market. And then I'd stay up till like 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, doing US stuff as well. I was burnt out again. And I was like, I can't live like this, you know? I've got family. I'm not even seeing them. I'm in the same house, but I'm not present, you know? But yeah, like it really did teach me a lot about sales in general, but going it alone, trying these different things. So I think a massive takeaway is if you've got to be coming into sales, you need to put into, you just got to take action.
Yeah.
Like, theory is good, but it's nothing without action.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I put it kind of akin to like driving a car. So you can, you know, do the theory tests and everything like that. And you can even take the actual practical tests. And that's based on everything your instructor's been giving you. But the real learning comes once you've passed your license and you get your own car and you go driving out on the road where you almost accidentally hit somebody's bumper or you accidentally go through the give way or you've run a traffic light by accident or you've come to a near miss with somebody. That's where you learn to go into it. So I think there's, you know, and it, like being a sales trainer myself, I kind of say to people, I can give you like a 7-week course and I can teach you all the things that I've done and I'll try and condense 20 years of sales knowledge into 7 weeks. But I kind of say to them, I'll train you, but I'll give you stuff that you can use straight away, but you will build up your own version of this over time. So you don't need to know everything, but I just want to give you some context that you can then apply, but you'll become your own salesperson through the experiences of F-ups, mistakes, you know, getting hit with the objection. And that's kind of what builds you up. I am also conscious of time and I think there might have to be a part two of this show because there are so many other things I want to discuss with you, Ashley. But what I want to kind of like move our conversation to is, so, you know, you've been at Brandwatch, you started as that commercial SDR, you had become an enterprise team lead, you became a senior manager, and, you know, you're at this management position right now with a great team. Could I just ask, what is your typical day to day? As a manager, what are you doing with your team? What does that kind of look like? And kind of what does it feel like to be a manager at Brandwatch for you, Ash?
I always look at it like, and I always say this to everyone as well, although I'm in this position, people are not working for me, I'm working for them. You know, I've been kind of lucky enough to get into this position to help others succeed, you know. And just by guiding them, you know, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think for me, it's more about trying to get the best out of the individuals so we can hit team goals, you know? And I don't know it all. You know, I don't. So when I'm like hiring for people, I want diverse range of experience and thought and different like communication styles and stuff like that. Mm. But a typical day to day, there is no typical day to day. Every day is completely different. Mm. So it could be firefighting, it could be conflict management with like other teams, it could be trying to get new accounts lists or sort out Salesforce, which everyone Salesforce is.
If it's not in the CRM, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's it. But because we're looking after the largest accounts in the world, there's so many moving parts to it. So, and I'll have like ad hoc coaching sessions or chats with the team, or I'll be creating like training material, mm-hmm. or it's just, yeah, just chasing that number down all the time. Mm. But I think for me, I think my biggest impact is having a voice at the table when it comes to kind of key decisions about the team. And I will back the team no matter what, 100%, to make sure that their lives are made easier, because sales development is not easy at all. It's hard. And I know that because I've done it. I've been there, done that, worn a t-shirt. And I think that gives me a slight advantage, because I really do relate to how tricky it can be, how it's not always, you're not always like exceeding quotas and stuff like that. It's, it's like, yeah, I'm just lucky to have the team I have, I think.
Yeah, and they're very lucky to have you, because again, I've worked with your team, and they speak highly of you. And I can then I've gotten into lots of different
orgs. It's all lies.
It's truth. It's truth. But the reason that I bring this up is I've worked with multiple startups, and I've worked with multiple SDR teams, and come across different leaders. Mm. And I can always notice when there is a good leader at the helm because of the vibe of that team. Their mindset, you know, the autonomy that they're given, and, you know, the guidance and openness, right? Because I can see when reps are scared to speak to the leader, and then I can see ones that are very open and happy to kind of bring topics up. And I think you've been able to facilitate that very well with you. So like a big salute. And I think the other thing, the reason why I wanted to ask the day to day is, and this isn't around Brandwatch, but this is just in general, where I have SDRs that come to me and said, oh, my boss is doing this and I want to do this and I want to hit my target, I want to get my pay rise, and, you know, I need help with this and that. Mm. And admittedly, as an individual contributor, you only have one kind of set of like targets. That's your patch, your leads, your, you know, your KPIs, and it's down to the individual.
Mm.
And sometimes I've like encouraged my SDRs, I've coaches, go look at your manager's calendar and just tell me what you think when you see that. Because as an SDR, you have your call block, you have your research block, you have your breaks, you have your lists, you have your DMs. Your manager is talking cross departments, right? They're talking to marketing, operations, and RevOps. Mm. They'll talk to you to help you out and coach and guide and train you. But they may have to do that 4 or 5 times across different people, and they have to do that. They then have to do their own stuff and admin, and they have their own targets. So I'm like, what I kind of say is, I'm like, we as an individual may have a problem, but your manager may have that multiplied by 8 and have to look after those people. So I always say, like, give them a bit of grace and see how you can help them to be your manager. Like, you bring them the problem, but then think of a solution to those problems, because then that will help your manager could say, yeah, do you know what? That could be a good idea. Try it. And it kind of enables them. What are your thoughts on that, Ash?
Yeah, 100%. And I think everyone's got to be different as well. Mm. You know, everyone's got to be at different stages in their career as well. I look at it like spinning plates, right? Mm. While the kitchen's on fire, while the plates are also on fire. You know. Because right now I'm even jumping on the phone myself and doing some prospecting for some of the accounts due to a few people leaving, due to promotions, etc. I think it's good that you kind of raised that. Like, everyone's got their own kind of challenges and stuff like that. And for a leader rather than a manager, I would say, you've got to kind of lead them people into where they need to go next.
Yeah.
I think an important point to kind of continue with that is for an SDR, it's not always about the next step's got to be an AE as well.
Yeah.
I think that's important to understand where people want to go next and how you can help. So say, for example, we just had someone recently go from SDR to senior SDR and now into a CSM role, which is not that typically heard of, right? It's more you go into an AE role. So then it's like, how can I help that person go to that role? Who can I speak to? So they can have conversations about the CSM role, understand that a little bit more. What's it entail? Is it just about firefighting or is it about building relationships? Is there a revenue part to it? Just so they have the full picture. So I'll sit down with the team and I'll say, tell me what's your next step? Where are we aiming for? And then I will go out into the business and find the managers or who's leading them particular teams so they can have conversations, open and frank conversations. What are the challenges? Is this role right for me before I dive into an interview process, for example?
Yeah. I think it's solid advice and, helping that person figure out what is that next step, because some people don't know what it is, because as you said, the atypical is go BDR, SDR, and then go into an AE.
Yeah.
And, in the last year, I've come across a lot of other SDRs that have said, actually, I don't know, but CSM life looks interesting to me. Or perhaps going into product looks interesting to me. Or perhaps even going into marketing, there are so many different paths with this. And I think as kind of a follow-up episode that I'd love to do with you is expand on the paths and kind of what SDRs and BDRs could be thinking about, how they can help prepare themselves. And, ultimately, how can they come to their manager to have a constructive conversation to help kind of start building up that path to help them take that next step. Because I think as a manager, we don't know what our reps want to do until they tell us. But equally, our reps may not know what they want to do. And we need to be able to give them some advice to help them come to a conclusion, right?
100%.
But I think this has been a freaking awesome episode so far, and I do want to do a part two with you. So audience, listen as much as there's going to be a round two for this, Ash, if you're up for that, because I think there are so many other topics I'd love to discuss. But for today's episode, I'd like to ask you, if you could go back to that Ash who, had that nasty accident, you're sitting on that hospital bed and you're asking yourself, what am I going to do? What should I be doing? What three bits of advice would you give to that younger Ash?
Well, if I had a time machine and we went back a little, I probably would have said, don't walk out without looking. that's not real there, right? I think, the three bits of advice I would say is take action, for sure. Take action. Learn sales early. Proper sales.
Yeah.
I think there's so many sales jobs out there that don't actually teach you a process, and also detach yourself from the outcome. I think that the kind of three bits I would say, because it's so easy to get attached to that outcome and just sound desperate. But actually, enjoy the process, trust the process, enjoy the process, thrive off the process, and the outcomes will happen. I think that those were the three bits.
Solid advice, sir, and I'll be looking forward to the next bits of advice in the next episode. So a big thank you to our listeners, watchers, subscribers and fans of the show. As a reminder, Ashley's LinkedIn profile will be within the show notes if you'd like to connect with him. And as mentioned, he is actually hiring, so if you'd like Ash to be a boss, an FYI, his phone number is on his profile, so if you want a cold call him, because he likes a bit of a cold call, make sure that you do that. But as a request to help us with this show, to get this message out there, to help more other people be inspired in the world of tech sales and sales development, in your local podcast platform, please give us a rating and subscribe. And if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure that you like, comment, subscribe. And if you've got any questions for Ash, pop them down in the comments below. But Mr. Ormond, it's been an absolute pleasure and privilege to finally have on your show, and I look forward to us to recording part two.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you for listening to the SDR Disco Call podcast today. We would like to get this message out to more and more sales development reps, so please like, comment, and share in your local podcast provider. If you don't want to miss a show, you can always send a blank email to SDR. discocall, one word, at bcast, which is bcast.email, and you'll be added to our mailing list. We're also on the lookout for new guests, so if you work in the world of sales development as an SDR, BDR, MDR, or ADR, and feel that you have an important message or story to share, feel free to email us at podcast@happyselling.io, and we'd love to have you on board.